Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.
Q is about conversation.
If we're really concerned about ending poverty, we've got to be more concerned about creating justice.
Our cultural products as Christians need to both defy and resonate with the culture.
And God's doing amazing things. His church is expanding. His church is growing.
It's not what's the purpose of my life. It's what is the purpose that's been assigned.
Stay curious. Think well. Advance good. This is Q.
Welcome to another edition of the Q Podcast. I'm so glad that you've joined us for this episode. We just came off of our Q 2017 conference, and you're going to get to hear some of the talks that took place here that are some of the ones that those who were participating said, you know, in our post-event surveys that they just loved. They were inspiring. And today is one of those. It's actually, it's kind of cheating because I'm letting you hear the final talk of Q 2017, and it embodies so much of what we were talking about for 3 days together. And the person that I interviewed in this is a man named Ernie Johnson. Now, those of you who are sports fans, maybe you have watched the NBA for a long time or you're watching the NBA finals right now. Ernie Johnson is a fixture every night on TNT. He's somebody who's won 3 Emmy Awards, sports Emmy Awards, as he's a broadcaster. And he's most recognized for hosting TNT's Inside the NBA with Charles Barkley, Kenny Smith, and Shaquille O'Neal. He's an award-winning sports broadcaster and a sports journalist, and he recently wrote a book, really a memoir of his life called Unscripted. And that's what our conversation was about, was his life. What has been the journey from growing up with a father who was a famous, you know, player in the Major League Baseball League to now being a sports broadcaster? And you're going to get to hear all about it from him. But what I love that you're going to hear most is a man who has a gentle heart, just a spirit that loves people no matter where he's showing up, that doesn't take too seriously the job that he has with access to some of the great and most famous NBA stars, sports and athletic stars. He does broadcasting on baseball, so he has access to so many things. But you don't pick that up when you hear him talk. You realize that this is a guy who loves God, who's a dedicated family man, who's learned a lot in his life and is pouring it back into us as we conclude our Q 2017 event. And so join in with me. You're going to hear me welcome him out, and you're going to hear the crowd laughing. And in the middle of this, you're even going to hear a video clip of a moment that went viral that I'll set up as you're hearing our conversation. But I think you're going to enjoy it, and you can always go to qideas.org, and you can actually watch this talk, share it with your friends. I think it'd be a great encouragement to people who are saying, what does it look like for me to be faithful, really in the heart of culture, in a place where millions of people watch every night? And as a person of faith, you have to make some of those big decisions about, am I going to speak up? Am I going to be bold, or am I going to hold back? And I think you're going to hear from Ernie what it means to be bold and to never hold back. So let's listen in. Let's take people back who haven't heard your story from the beginning. I mean, you grew up in a sports family yourself. Your father was an amazing baseball player.
Yeah.
What was it like for you growing up in a family where you were the son of an athlete?
The only regret I think I had, Gabe, was that I was the third born of, you know, I have two older sisters who could appreciate watching my dad pitch in a Major League Baseball game for the Milwaukee Braves and winning the World Series in 1957. I was a year old at the time, so my recollections are a little fuzzy. But it was great because once he retired, he went into broadcasting, and I would just tag along with him to the ballpark. He'd be going there 6 hours before the first pitch. He'd have work to do. I'd be sitting around the batting cage. Hank Aaron's asking me how my little league team is doing. It was, you know, it was great stuff. And
wow.
And so it was a wonderful thing to do as a kid who loved baseball, but the greatest learning environment I could ever have from just watching my dad and how he acted and how he prepared his work and how he treated people and how he never thought he was special because of the job he had. Mm. I learned a lot just by observing. And I tell people, look, moms and dads out there, kids have superpowers. They see and hear everything. They really do. And they're watching constantly how you handle certain situations, because that's what I did growing up.
So did you play sports yourself?
I was, I wanted to be a baseball player, and I went to the University of Georgia. I'm not one of these guys who had a mailbox full of letters from major colleges saying, please come and play for us. You know, I knew I was going to have to walk on, and so I walked on as a freshman at the University of Georgia and was told to walk off as a sophomore. So I had one glorious season wearing the red and black at the University of Georgia. Went 2-for-18 with one career RBI. That's a run batted in if you're not a baseball fan. And I sort of remember that day. It was against Tennessee in Knoxville on a Thursday at 4:25. Temperature was 62 degrees when I had that RBI. And I rifled a single the other way to knock in the go-ahead run, and then a guy for Tennessee hit a grand slam in the bottom of the inning to beat us, and nobody remembered my RBI. But
now, how did you move from, you know, you watched your father growing up as he moved into broadcasting. Was that your inspiration, and how quickly did you find yourself moving into this field and this industry?
I think he was my inspiration, though I didn't really want to do that. I had told myself if baseball didn't work out, I would be an English teacher and a baseball coach. And that way I could keep my hand in baseball, and I love the English language, and I was terrible at math, so I guess, you know, if I'm going to teach something, it would be English. But it was really my dad's co-worker. He worked with Skip Carey and Pete Van Wieren and Joe Simpson for a long time, and it was Skip who said, you ought to try this. You got a good voice. You love sports. And because my dad never forced me, which I'm forever grateful that he didn't say, I did this, so you should do this, and, you know. And I tried it, and I liked it, and I was, you know, I was like, you get into the games free. You get to watch stuff, you know, you get to go to games. You can call the PR guy and say, hey, I'd like to go to the hockey game tonight. Okay, it'll be a pass for you. Hey, this is great. And so, yeah, then it's just a question of trying to advance your career from radio into TV and, you know, Macon, Georgia, Spartanburg, South Carolina, then to Atlanta. People been to Macon? Been to Spartanburg? Which makes Macon look a little bit like Rio de Janeiro. I mean, I loved my time in Spartanburg, but I was wanting to get to Atlanta, and eventually I did. And I've been at Turner since 1989, which is an eternity.
Well, in the midst of your career, I know personally you were met with a bit of a health crisis.
Yeah.
Talk about how, in the midst of success professionally, this kind of caught you, and what that experience was like and what it taught you.
Everybody in the room has been touched by some way by cancer, whether it's a family member, it's a friend, it's you yourself. And so just a little fabric on the story. I came to faith kind of late in life. As you know, grew up a Catholic as an altar boy, went to Georgia, and discovered that Sunday morning was really for sleeping off Saturday night. It wasn't for going to church, and I drifted away so totally. And then I was having a degree of success in my life. You know, I was like, great wife, great kids, great job, haven't given God a second thought. And it wasn't until I was 41 years old and I just kind of looked at my life and said, there's got to be more than I'm making of this, that I dedicated my life to Jesus Christ on December 10th, 1997. And it was that day that has prepared me for the rest of everything that would go on. So in 2003, when a doctor says, yes, it is cancer, you've got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, I wanted to punch God in the nose. I said, look, we got four kids. We've adopted two of these kids from Romania and Paraguay, and we're, you know, I'm doing what I think I'm supposed to be doing, and now this. Mm. And it was really at that time that I settled on really what has become a mantra in my life after a conversation with my pastor, Kevin Myers, at 12 Stone outside Atlanta. He said, look, you trusted God with your life in 1997. You know, you trusted Jesus with this. Now in 2003, what's that trust look like? Does it look like I'll trust if the next test comes back the way you want it to? I'll trust when God does this? Or is it trust God, period? And that's where we landed the plane. And that it really is what got me through that foundation of faith, that saying, look, I'm seeing this much of the picture of my life.
Yeah.
And I know this episode is going to form me and mold me in some way. And I know that, look, this is not why did this happen. It's how my Heavenly Father's going to use this.
Yeah.
And so it was from that point on. Anytime you get an email from me, and just send me your emails, I'll send you an email. It's trust God, period. So that's how I live it.
It's a pretty good mantra. I think as you went back into your career following going through this cancer scare and actually recovering – you're back on the job. Faith is now a deeper, probably, part of your life.
Yeah.
How does faith, for those who are working in all kinds of different industries, like for you in your space, how has faith been a part of that? How does it get expressed? Do you find yourself in the tension in our world today where you sort of sometimes need to stay quiet because, man, it's just not that welcome to hear what the Christian might have to say about the situation?
Welcome to my world. I mean, it really is kind of that way. And I think we all go through that, and I think there are always times where you're treading that line, but you have to be true to yourself. And I know people ask me all the time, well, are you witnessing to Charles? You know, it's like, I said, I hope I'm witnessing to everybody. Yeah. You know, I hope I'm witnessing that if people look at my life, they'll say, that guy's got something. Or now he's got something he didn't used to have because I knew him way back before 1997 and he ain't the same guy. Mm. But there are times on the air when it's appropriate. I mean, it's not like I walk into our production meetings and I say, hey, all right, guys, you know, we're on at 8 o'clock tonight. Everybody take out your Bibles and turn to Romans 8. Let's dive in. You know, but there are times where it comes up where I can be honest. I can recall when Kevin McHale lost his daughter. And I said on the air that I was praying for him and praying that he would know this peace that passes on all understanding. And if you were a believer and you were watching that night, you got it. And even if you're not, you're saying, well, that sounded a little biblical, you know, but yeah, but there are times where it's, and I know where you're going with this. I know where you're going.
I want people to see just about 6 months ago, in the midst of this election taking place, You were in a moment on a show about basketball, but you guys talk about life.
Yeah.
In the middle of that moment, you clearly felt inspired to say something. I want people to see what you said, and then I want to talk about it.
Right.
Let's roll that.
Season started, I felt like I'd been dealt a bad hand. I had these couple of choices. And there were trust issues with Hillary Clinton I couldn't get past. And there was this inflammatory rhetoric from Donald Trump, which to me was incomprehensible and indefensible. I couldn't vote for either one. For the first time in going to the polls for 42 years, I hit the write-in button. And I voted for John Kasich. And I left knowing that John Kasich wasn't going to win. But I left with a clear conscience because I hadn't settled. Number two, I'm hopeful. I watched the video today at CNN on what was going on at the White House with Donald Trump, President Obama. I was hopeful and I was encouraged that there will be a difference between the President Trump and the campaigning Trump. And I'm with these guys. We have to give them a chance. But here's the deal. I just hope that he's all in fixing the wounds in this country and the divides that separate this country. And I want to be part of that too. And for me to be part of it, I have to look in the mirror and I have to say, how am I going to be a better man? How am I going to be a better neighbor? How am I going to be a better citizen? How am I going to be a better American? How can I be a fountain and not a drain? And number three, I know you're not supposed to talk about politics and religion, but we're already talking about politics, and so I'm going to go the R direction too. I never know from one election to the next who's going to be in the Oval Office. But I always know who's on the throne. And I'm on this earth because God created me. And that's who I answer to. I'm a Christian. I follow this guy named Jesus. You might have heard of him. And the greatest commandment he gave me was to love others. And Scripture also tells us to pray for our leaders. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pray for Donald Trump. I'm going to pray for all those people right now who feel like they're on the outside looking in, who are afraid at this point. Pray for them too. In short, I'm praying for America. And I'm praying that one day we're going to look back and we're going to say, you know what? That Donald Trump presidency, that was all right. But I'm praying.
Now, in that moment, honestly, I mean, what were you feeling? Were you like, man, I might lose my job in about 5 minutes when we go to commercial break? Or were you feeling a little more confident that, hey, this is okay. We've created a space where I can talk about these things, and I actually am not that concerned about it.
I was in the trust God period area. I was. I mean, that day in the office, I knew we were all going to have 2 minutes. Charles, Shaq, Kenny, and I were all going to have 2 minutes in a pregame show to talk about the election. And it was one of those nights where, you know, I was doing my basketball prep work, but I could not stop thinking about where I was going to go. Am I going to play it safe and say, wow, what a stunner, hope it works? Or am I going to be totally transparent? And that's what you saw. I said, look, I'm going to explain that the only way I can view this is the way I viewed cancer in my life. It's the way I view muscular dystrophy in my son's life. It's through the lens of faith.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that what I didn't want to do, Gabe, was hit anybody over the head with it. And I didn't want to tell anybody, this is the way you've got to think too. I said, this is the way I processed it, man. Look, my world's not going to collapse because Donald Trump's in office, because I know who's got control. Mm-hmm. And that was the message I wanted to put out.
Yeah.
And then to see, I never thought it would do what it did. I mean, two days later, my wife and I are at the kitchen table, and she's got her Facebook open to look at pictures of the grandkids. And she's like, dang, Ernie, that Trump thing you talked about the other night's got 15 million views on Facebook. And I'm like, really? And but I had gotten my Twitter, it exploded. It was, I mean, all night long. Yeah. That's all I heard. And then, and obviously, I heard from others too. I heard people, we don't care about your politics. What a stupid way to vote. Stick to sports. I had somebody, you know, and a high profile political guy who was like, that is the most naive thing. Prayer doesn't work. And somebody asked me, a writer asked me, how do you respond to that? And I said, there was a time in my life I didn't think prayer worked either until I turned 41. So maybe the light will go on.
Yeah.
And so, it was just one of those things. And I never did this to say, let's shake up the internet. But looking back, I knew that if you mention Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, and Jesus Christ in the same 2 minutes, people are going to yap. You know.
Well, there's no question that I'm sure many of you saw that in the moment that it happened. But the whole country was feeling this angst, and you really spoke to it, and you were honest and personal and vulnerable about it. Now, for the leaders in this room who are in, again, industry spaces, public space, they're not in ministries. They don't always feel that bold or confident that they can say the kind of things that come to them in those moments or that are on their heart. Now, of course, every time you say something, there's millions of people watching, and it's a huge test that you have to kind of run it through that lens. But in their own personal relationships and in your relationships with Charles and Shaq and the producers and the whole team, how would you encourage them to be more bold, to be more bold about the kind of things we share? Because I feel like most of us are just being a little quieter in this moment. Well, and maybe what the world needs is a little more conversation about the things that really matter.
I'm with you. And I think, look, you have to be intentional. And you have to have your antenna up. Because it's not like you're going to walk in and address the company as a whole with your beliefs. But there will come times, and again, when I give examples like this, please don't think that I'm trying to blow myself up and that I got it all figured out, because I don't. I just kind of, I feel for that hand on my shoulder when the Spirit kind of taps you and says, that's the person you need to talk to. And there was a woman going through cancer in this restaurant we've got at Turner, and she was just the sweetest lady, and I noticed she had lost all her hair, and I just talked to her about, and we kind of swapped stories about going through chemo and all that stuff, and it was a morning, and I was just getting a cup of coffee, and I said, hey, I know I got to get down to work, but let me lift you up real quick, you know. So we sat there, and we just had 30 seconds where I just asked, you know, God to keep his hand on her shoulder and keep her strong and that kind of thing. And 2 weeks ago, this woman from the maintenance staff stops me in the hallway. And she said, I know you pray, because I saw you praying with Nadia a couple months ago. She said, I'm about to lose my house. Will you just pray for me? And I'm sitting here in the middle of this stairwell at Turner Broadcasting. And I don't care who sees it. I really don't. And I'm not going to force my beliefs on anybody. But I would hope that when I go through my day-to-day, that somebody would look at that and say, you know, what is it? How did you stay hopeful? And they would open the door to a conversation. Mm-hmm. I think too often we're just concerned with trying to get a notch on our belt and say, hey, I led somebody to Christ today. Well, who are they? I don't know their name, but I just, you know, but you got to be invested. We got to be invested. And that, you know what that involves is getting ourselves out of this, walking around work, never looking up to see people, and being invested in the lives and learning about the people we work with and learning that they've been through something tough and that maybe your background and your experience can help them. And again, I don't have it all figured out, but man, I'm trying to walk through here with my head on a swivel because sometimes you can just see it in somebody's eyes that a 5-minute conversation there might really be helpful. Instead of making sure something didn't happen on Twitter that you missed. And I hope that kind of answers it.
Yep.
And I don't have all the answers. I'm the last guy to have all the answers, but I do have a relationship with the guy who does.
It speaks to the fact you talk about this in your book. Ernie's new book just came out called Unscripted, The Unpredictable Moments That Make Life Extraordinary. It's exactly what you just described. You call them BlackBerry moments. Just give us a few, 30 seconds on what is a BlackBerry moment.
This has nothing to do with this. It has nothing to do with a mobile device. It has to do with a Little League game I was playing in years ago. Ball went over the fence. Outfielders went over to retrieve it. Got sidetracked because they saw BlackBerries growing. And so the game was stopped for a moment because they were eating blackberries instead of looking for the ball. And so that became a modern day parable for me years later. As I grew older and wiser, we would tell this story. My dad loved that story being a ball player. He'd never been through a blackberry delay, you know, and so he loved that story. And all it says to me is you have to be looking for these moments when you're, and not be so tied up in the game.
Yeah.
You know, the next conference call and the next business meeting and the next this or the next that, because it can be right there. A moment so sweet you'll never forget it. And so what's cool for me now, you know, I've got with these 6 kids and 2 of them are married and I've got 2 grandchildren. It's awesome. But I'll get a text from my daughter Maggie who's at the park watching her daughter learn how to swing and says BlackBerry moment. And all I'm trying to do, Gabe, is take all of that and the stuff I learned from my dad. And hopefully generations down, there will be a little Johnson kid or a Johnson parent who just knows me from a picture in a scrapbook and says, hey, that was a BlackBerry moment.
Mm, so good. Let's thank Ernie Johnson for his wisdom. Thank you, brother.
Man, thank you so much.
That was so fun being with Ernie. And it was funny, a few days after this interview, he called me personally to just say, hey, I had such a great time being with this group at Q. It was so great to just get to experience a group of people that's a room not full of just pastors, but these are people out in every area of culture, much like those of you listening, who he really related to and felt in some ways like peers with. Because every day, as you know, as you're listening to this, you're out trying to live out your faith. You're trying to love others. But the simple things that he talks about, I mean, the moments, you know, where you stop and you notice and you spend time with people or you pray over people in the stairwell, you know, at your corporate headquarters. These are the things that impacted me the most, is that no matter where you're at in life, no matter how famous maybe you've become, no matter what kind of success you've had financially or materially, that deep down, what God's called us to is to love others. And when we're faithful with that, he gives us more and more opportunities to do that. And so in so many ways, Ernie encapsulates so much of what we talked about over these 3 days by being a humble servant who was serving in the middle of a channel, the media channel of culture in television, and yet in that space saying, I'm going to be faithful and I'm going to speak up. I'm going to be who I am. I'm not going to be ashamed to talk about Jesus. I'm not going to be ashamed to talk about my life. I'm not going to be ashamed to talk about my failures, some of the hardest crises of my life, of fighting cancer and so on. And so I hope you're inspired today. I hope you'll share this with some of your friends and invite them to come be a part of the Q podcast every week. We're going to be introducing and having interviews and talks just like this that I hope will encourage you. And I hope as you start making plans even for next year that you'll be with us. I want you to be in the room next year, April 11th through 13th in Nashville for Q2018. We're already beginning the process. It's already 50% sold out, which means in about 6 months, it'll probably be a full room. And so we want you to be a part and make plans to join us. You can go to qideas.org/2018 to reserve your seat or reserve your table for you and your team. This show is made possible in partnership with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.
If you enjoy what you hear on Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons and want to be part of bringing others together to work for the common good and flourishing of your community, why not consider helping to bring the Q Conference experience to your town for one special night on October 26th?
Christians believe that culture making is taking the raw material that God has made, and we're rearranging material for human flourishing and human thriving as God defines it.
Q Commons is a special live event featuring great national thought leaders plus local ones too. In hosting a Q Commons event, you'll be part of unifying believers in your community, promoting dialogue on difficult but important issues, and encouraging action for the common good. Q Ideas can guide you on how to host a Q Commons event. We can provide technical support and coaching to help you put together an event in your city. To learn more, visit qcommons.com. Q Commons, a global event advancing local good.